You're listening to an Irreverent Podcast. Visit Irreverent FM for more content from our friends.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Everybody and welcome. My name is Janice Legata, and this is God Has Not Given, an ex-evangelical podcast featuring me and my failing faith and conversations with my friends and family. And this week is a special episode. It is a delicious audio sample of my new podcast called Bad Words. Hello, hello, and welcome to Bad Words, an ex-evangelical podcast where we give toxic theology the read that it deserves by taking another look at some of the books that have been given major influence in evangelical Christianity. I am Janice Legata, and this is a meeting of the Bad Book Club. We are reading The Bait of Satan by John Bevere, biting into it one chapter at a time. I'll read the opening paragraph and give a few thoughts, and then join one of the members of the Bad Book Club for a discussion. In the end, I'll read the closing paragraph and give some closing thoughts, all with the intention of leaving you free to think your own thoughts about the chapter, the book, and all things really. So, without further ado, let's get into...
Chapter 1, Me Offended? It is impossible that no offenses should come. Luke 17:1. As I travel across the United States ministering, I have been able to observe one of the enemy's most deadly and deceptive traps. It imprisons countless Christians, severs relationships, and widens the existing breaches between us. It is the trap of offense.
Oh boy. I actually don't want to say too much here, because clean slate, there honestly shouldn't be too much to say, right? We're just getting into it. So, I'll just ask you to think about what you would expect from this chapter. John Bevere has laid out his premise. We know right off the top that he is very concerned about the trap of offense. So, what are some reasonable things you think we can reasonably expect from this foundational chapter? Make a little mental note, or a Notes app note if you want, and keep track as I get into it with Bad Book Club member number one, Sheba.
How do I do this intro? So I grew up in the church since I was a little girl, Indian by ethnicity, and grew up specifically in like the AG church. And I always had questions. I was always that kid in youth group being like, but wait, I had this one question. And they were like, and they would go back to the Bible, like pray about it. Or they would give me a very limited response that didn't ever answer my questions. And of course, it just grew from there, right? And the more that I was exposed, for example, like meeting people from other religions, meeting people from even the Mormon faith that were, I told were a cult, but as I got to know them, had lived exactly parallel experiences, even the good parts of experiencing, you know, God's miraculous power and things of that sort. I was like, wait a minute, this is not how it's supposed to go. And so, being Indian too, like understanding more about Hinduism, meeting friends with those experiences as well, I started to realize it was like, there just are a lot of questions that aren't being answered. And going into the biggest question of all for me, which is, how is the Bible made? How did we get the Bible? Because always the answer was going back to consult the Bible. Right. But nobody, for as many, you know, they went to like the top theological schools or seminaries, were not really able to get into the depths, had admitted that they didn't really study how all of that came together, which, you know, now at this stage in life is something that I am learning piece by piece. And it's just ushered more questions, but it's also brought me a lot of relief, you know, that we are human. My faith in God is not in any way eliminated. They're questions. Uh-huh. There's a lot of hurt to work through. But I guess my involvement is just to hopefully afford the chance to the equivalent of who I am and who I was, you know, that other people know that they're not alone. They're not crazy. They're not taken over by the evil one to have these doubts and the questions. They're exercising their intelligence and their humanity. And that's a beautiful, good, healthy thing, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just here for finding a community that is willing to delve in and be honest.
Well, you have come to the right place.
I think so.
Although everything you just said would be considered super offensive.
Which is wild to me. Yeah, I swear most people who know me are like, she's so nice. She's so nice. But apparently, yeah, being honest is offensive.
And that's a big problem, especially because right. We are here today to talk about offense.
That's right, yes.
And being offended. And so this is chapter one of the Bad Book Club as a thing in general, and of our first book, which is The Bait of Satan by John Bevere. So let's talk about your history with this book. When did you first become aware of The Bait of Satan?
I was either a teenager or early 20s, and our church was really very into the Beveres, and also had chosen this book as something to be studied in each of the Bible studies. Bible study, but okay, but yes. Our simple faith just needs supplemental book as well. So yes, that's how I got introduced, and I was reading through it and had a lot of self-loathing. I was I'm like, wow, I'm so evil for being upset.
The but nerve.
Only the psalmist is allowed to be upset. Only the psalmist. When we read the Bible and read that, it's calling for like his enemies to be killed. He should have read this book. Right? So funny.
He needed it, yeah. Uh-huh. So you did actually read it before?
Yes, decades. Yep. Ago, yeah.
Because as I'm reading through it, I'm like, did I actually read this? Like, I know he was on the world tour, so I know I've heard him speak several times.
Right.
And then I definitely seen the book.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like I had it. But maybe it's just because I've gone so far, I'm like, this seems so ridiculous and circular and just...
I know.
Did I read it? I'm pretty sure I did, but maybe I also just trauma blocked it out.
Yeah, exactly. And then after reading so many of these books too, that you're just like, it starts to all blur, but the messaging is there, right? Like, we just have that messaging in our head, so we won't recall specific books necessarily, but it's just Everybody piggybacks off of each other. So
yeah. So how did you feel at the prospect of reading part of it again?
So nervous. It's like just so nervous because I had seen this book in my parents' home, who I love, but we are in different places of, you know, of where we, how we examine, you know, our evangelical churches and the faith and things of that sort. And I just rolled my eyes and I walked by. I was like, ugh. So now to voluntarily go and like read a chapter of it, I was like, it's only because I just respect so much of what you're doing and just love, you know, just having this sense of community and we're not crazy or alone. That is the only reason I'm getting back into it. Otherwise, no thanks.
Well, again, I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, I appreciate what you're doing. So
not an easy ask. So what chapter did you have?
I had chapter one. And so it began with really his big, like it says, you know, it's titled Me Offended. And so in it, like I just found it kind of... I guess a little odd because it was like he was saying so many people are so stunned as to the aspect of being offended. And I thought, That's just so ironic. That kind of just tells you there's a disconnect, right? Because in being human, there is conflict. And we are taught in the church constantly of like the battle of the heavenlies and the demonic, you know, the battle of like the person who has come against the church and that. So I was like, you know what? You touched on something because that is true. I remember being in the church and being like, oh, I'm surprised that these people are having issues, like as a kid, right? As a kid and as a teenager. And I was just so in love with Jesus and the Lord that I was like, wow, why would people be so angry and mean to each other? You know, so in that way, he's right. But it's ignoring that basic precept of there's conflict. We're human.
Right.
How do you navigate that versus you're evil for having these emotions and conflict?
Right. And like thinking back on it, yeah, it is surprising to me that churches have so many issues. And like, you know, Christians are fighting with each other.
Yeah.
But I would never naturally come at it from the perspective of the problem is people being hurt, like in the sense that they're feeling hurt,
right,
instead of no, they're being hurt.
Right.
Like people are having issues because people are doing things or saying things.
Right.
Like it's not about the feelings.
Right.
Like I'm never surprised, oh, they're so wounded when they got punched.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Having that empathy and just not shaming people for feeling what they honestly should feel if something bad happens.
Right.
The other thing, like I, you know, again, I don't recall the forthcoming chapters. So I think, you know, when he classifies it, he said, you know, there are two classes of people, those who perceive that something bad has happened and those to which something legitimately bad happened.
Right.
And I thought, my gosh, like, I think, and I recalled, I was just like, I had a tough time at various points in the book because I'm like, again, it's denigrating people, right, who have been legitimately abused, you know, and especially, let's call it like right within the church and the powers that be. And it's, and that line and that, you know, classification of like those who perceive it versus those who actually are, unfortunately within the church, it's like a lot of people get pushed into the first category of you're just perceived. Your perception is that you were, but you're offended, my friend. And it's like,
yeah,
never mind that you probably have gone through something prosecutable by law. But, you know, it's your choice as to whether you hang on to the offense.
Right.
So it's just that section alone almost like gave me the chills of like, oh gosh, you know, here
we are. And because he very much focuses on the people who are perceived to have been offended.
Correct.
Like that's what most of the book speaks to. But he does in one chapter deal with people who have actually been offended, and it is as awful as you would expect. You know what he's gonna say, even though you would hope, oh no, maybe he actually, you know, has some sympathy for that, but he doesn't.
Right.
So yeah, so as reading through it, what are some things that stood out to you, good or bad?
You know, I will say this. I like the fact of trying to having the intent to have people mature through conflict. Okay. And I think that's a life skill that we all need, you know, from the time that we're little, you know, playground skirmishes, your cousin, your sibling, your, you know, does something that you don't like. That's real. You know, we all have to maturely handle situations outside of abuse. I'm not saying let's leave that aside, a separate category, but, I like that when that's the intent, with this in the first first chapter, again, just going just through that, what I don't like is that it is just all looped into like this overgeneralization, right? Of just like feeling offense is somehow a bad thing. And so I don't know, I don't recall the later chapters of how many, if you know, what redeeming sentences or lines or intents were shared as far as, I guess, you know, like recognizing the humanity and saying, like, you know, just as you would not get upset with your child who had some tears that somebody said something really hurtful to them on the playground, but you also teach them about their self-worth and how to handle that and protect them, you wouldn't just say, buck up. Like, don't, you know, like, this is a choice that you have, you know, to forgive and to not allow offense and Satan, you know, as ploy to take root in your heart. You would never handle that situation. So I guess that's the thing that I'm like, my God, can you handle a human heart that's in an adult form with the same amount of just respect and compassion and understanding? Especially because it's when you're dealing with a church organization, just abuse is a legitimate thing. Power plays, manipulation. So it just honestly, just like reading through this, I was like, it's almost just like bracing myself because I was right. Like, I don't know if anything more redeeming was said as it goes on.
I mean, I haven't reread the whole book yet, so
can't blame you.
Maybe it does happen.
Chunk at a time. In
the last chapter, but thus far, no. But even that idea of how you would treat your child, so much of Christianity is kind of like put into these categories. So we are forever children to, you know, the authorities over us, or we're sheep to the shepherds. Yes. Like, there always has to be just this really clear delineation of who you are and, you know, and how people are treating you.
Right.
And how they're allowed to treat you.
Right.
And as somebody who was a Christian child, like, this stuff, it filters through. So you can't believe this for adults and not have that affect how you're going to treat your children.
Right.
And especially when they're having feelings about things that you're doing, you know.
Yes, great point.
That they have feelings about.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this book, I don't think it affected my young childhood that much, but, you know, just been seeing how me and my mom's relationship is now, and just, like, just seeing these things, and even as a full-grown adult, knowing that my mom does not see me, you know, as an adult, like, I'm forever her child.
Same, yes.
And she forever thinks, you know, she's the authority figure.
That's right, yes.
And has to 100%. Regulate my emotions still. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's not what we're doing.
Right, exactly. There are just so many aspects to this that, like, when you're talking about the authority aspect of it, right, I remember in our, my childhood church, you know, around the same time where we were studying this book, there was a very ironic scenario where, you know, there was, I think we were actually studying it because the church was going through like the split scenario. And then at the same time, you know, the pulpit, there were two different options. There's a clear, like, plastic one, and there was a heavy wooden one. And it was very large. And during this time, the pastor actually said, you know, I like to have this lighter, you know, clear pulpit one, because I don't consider myself, you know, different from you all. But when this conflict was happening, he said, I now see that I have to switch back to the other pulpit, the large, heavy pulpit, you know, showing that physical manifestation of his authority because of the conflict, you know, within the church. And I just thought, you know, it didn't you know, stick out as something highly problematic when I was young, because it's, I've grown up with this mentality, right? You're inculcated with it. And now, like, realizing that we read this book around that same time and that, you know, here it is about offense. But I was like, well, clearly he was offended. He's like needing to react in that way. And the whole church, because everyone was inculcated. These are like grown people with, like, you know, their own jobs and children and all of that. You know, most people like didn't question a thing. Right. Didn't question a thing. And it's just that's the most humbling part in all this, is to read this now on the other side, recognizing that it's like humans as a whole, whether it's like a cult leader, a political leader, whatever it may be, and in your church, people really do submit to this authority type of figure, and we're conditioned to do that. And it's like, so reading that book in light of that recognition, I think would be so helpful. You know, that's how horrible, atrocious things from like genocide has happened in this world, you know? And yeah. So, but it's just sad, because it's like, you can't have, or I haven't been able to have a lot of discussions with, you know, my own mother who was right in that church at the same time, you know, mm-hmm. And, who is willing to, you know, acknowledge, yes, that humans can do that. And yes, that's how like evil things have happened, but doesn't see the parallel of how that can happen within the church, because somehow we're immune. But John Bevere right here says we're not, and people shouldn't be shocked. So why can we not discuss that?
Yeah. John Bevere literally does not want you to feel any of your feelings. Don't feel hurt. And also, don't feel shocked about being hurt that you can't feel.
Just don't feel.
Just don't feel.
Yes, that's right.
Just be here.
We are robots with free will.
So, in the preface of the book, mm-hmm. John Bevere starts out saying, "The book you hold is quite possibly the most important confrontation with truth you'll encounter in your lifetime." And then, towards the end of the preface, he says, "This book is not a theory. It is God's word made flesh."
Made flesh. God's word made flesh. Okay. So it's Jesus. Because that's who I'm told Jesus is. Okay. Wow. That's a lot of weight on this book. That's a lot. Wow. Okay. Well,
yeah.
Are there people who, you know, who have given like testimonials to this book or have
written? There are. And every, because this book was this version of it was a re-release, I think, for the 10th anniversary. So every chapter in this book starts, it has a little testimonial.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Right before.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. I mean.
Anyone else testify? They're like, this is the word made flesh. I want somebody to either acknowledge that or be like, nobody. It's not quite that, but.
I mean, it is God's word. It is
a heavy line. That's heretical, if you ask me. I don't, church folk, do they really read that line? That's problematic. I mean,
because Jesus was supposed to be that. Or maybe second to Jesus. No, I would say the Bible, but the Bible is the word, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Made flesh.
So yeah, this is the fourth part of the Trinity, I guess.
This is some new revelation. Glad for it.
We know it's now the quadrinity. It's like
oh my gosh, this is amazing.
So I have, let me see, I was reading through it. I mean, that crazy statement just carries through. And yeah. I'm like, he just says so many things without, just not backing it up. Like, what did I have here? So, attorneys will tell you the most vicious cases are in the divorce courts. And I'm like, okay, but what attorneys? Like, are we talking about family law? Because I'm like,
right.
That's all you would be doing, so I guess. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And right after that, and the American media constantly reports murders in the homes by desperate family members. And I'm like, wait, who is murdering who?
I want to see the stats. In the back of the book, is there anything linking? No, because I don't see, nope, it's not. There's nothing here that's even annotated with any facts. Okay.
No, because there's
no research. There's no research that went into this. It's just like if I went to coffee with my lawyer friend and they said that, and I was like, excellent. I shall now be including that in my living word of a book. Word of God.
Tell me about your worst case. And you go away. You're like, every lawyer I have spoken to.
All the lawyers. No names shall be named. No then, studies shall be linked. No bibliography.
Just take my word for it.
Yeah.
Take my word more.
And if you dare question me, I will be offended. And I don't want to go there.
And then you were lucky because in the first chapter here, mm-hmm. you're the only one who gets the definition, John Bevere's working definition of offense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this is crazy. He starts out, he gives a little, I didn't even look at the Bible to see what this context is, or if this is even the whole verse. But he quotes Luke 17:1, and Jesus saying, you know, it is impossible that no offenses should come. And then he takes that and he just runs with it. So he says, you know, the Greek word for offend comes from the word scandalon. And then he never mentions Luke 17:1 again. He just forges ahead into 2 Timothy 2:24 mm-hmm. and then just verses.
Right.
But I'm like,
right.
You never really spend any time with that verse that you've taken this one word from.
Right. And then he goes all the way to the end, too, to, like, revelation from it. The cure. The cure is found, yes, under Revelation. The wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. They had mistaken their financial strength for spiritual strength. Pride hid their true condition. Many are this way today. They do not see the true condition of their hearts, just as I was able to see the resentment I carried toward those ministers. I was convinced, I had convinced myself I was not hurt. it's kind of ironic because he is saying, like, in this fact, like, he was trying to even, He's just calling out the religious mechanism that we all have a problem with at this point, right? Who are, you know, starting to delve into these aspects of it is the fact that he was like, I had convinced myself I was not hurt. I was like, well, there you go. Exactly. But it's when you have these authoritarian figures telling you and deeming you what is perceived offense, perceived hurts and abuses versus what is legitimate, you shut down your own humanity. That's how you're able to look at people in these situations and think that you can just be the judge and dehumanize, you know, their experience in that. And so I don't know if he, like, in this one chapter, he, again, it's like these little tidbits, like, these scriptures doesn't go into much depth. the fact that he had felt offense, but I don't know, like, the context of what had happened there. Right. So it's just, it's like these little bite-sized snippets of statements, but no real context. So it's honestly a bit confusing in that way, what it is he's trying to get across. And then it's just like to contrast that, right? Like, okay, having offense, I guess this is like his point, is like having, I guess, the dross of gold, you know, that black part that needs to be removed. And he's saying, like, refined gold is soft and pliable, free from corrosion of other substances. And so, and then he's like going on to say, pure heart is like pure gold, soft, tender, and pliable. And so basically, like, if we have offense, direct quote, we are hindered in our ability to hear God's voice. Our accuracy to see is darkened. This is a perfect setting for deception. But does he also recognize that not acknowledging the humanity and the emotions and understanding and being self-aware and acknowledging humanity is also self-deception? I don't see any lines going into anything of depth to give us some context on his mentality. So it's hard for me to say that there is a whole lot redeemable and good based on this one chapter and just the way that it's like, doesn't give any context.
Right.
Is, you know, setting up like snippets of these different scriptures, but doesn't go into much context of it.
Which, that'll lead right into the next question, but kind of, especially if you were going to preface your book as, you know, truth that everybody needs to read, the Word made flesh.
The Word made flesh.
And I'm like, okay, you're saying this book is for everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then as an author, who are you writing this to?
Right.
Because, you know, to talk about people are shocked and offended, but also talking about in the last days, people will be lovers of themselves.
Right,
and,
right.
And we expect that of the world. But then also talking about the gold and being refined and all that. So is this written to people who have grown up in the church, or who, because like when did you have time to get corrupted by the world, right? And if you're talking to people who've come out of the world, wouldn't you have that stuff? Isn't it supposed to come out? You know, and why would you, John Bevere, be worried about what I brought in from the world? Shouldn't I be offended by that stuff? Like, shouldn't I have feelings about that? Like, where is that supposed to go?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
If I came in with issues,
yeah,
of course that's going to come out.
Yeah.
You know, and why, how am I supposed to know, you know, what to do with that?
Right. Yeah. So that's exactly the thing that I'm wondering. I was like, does he start? And I can't recall this, but I want to say no based on my reaction when I saw this book and being like, no, thank you. That it's like, it's one thing if you're like, what's the real intent? Like, I'm like, okay, if it's teaching people to process where they're not going to be bound up, right? Forgiveness is beautiful. That is one of the things that I'm just so captured by, you know, the message of Jesus. And how he had regarded his, you know, quote-unquote enemies. Of course, forgiveness is vital. But, I mean, not going into the context of, like, this book is to enable you to, you know, effectively heal. Acknowledge the emotions that I can tell you I didn't acknowledge, which he clearly says in there. And then to know, you know, when you're hanging on to those emotions and haven't processed them enough or well enough in the light of even God's, you know, promises to strengthen you and help you, you know, and heal you and make you whole, and that he will handle your, you know, your situations as well. Here's how you do that. Here's how my experience I don't see that in this book. You know, it was just, to me, it was just so, from what I recall, like reading it and just the PTSD of just seeing like chapter one again, it just reminds me, I'm like, it's so prescriptive, but I don't know for what. It just feels like a tool to just say, just get over it to everybody, you know? And it's a tool, this authoritarian type tool. I honestly don't understand, considering that the preface is that it's just such an incredibly important book.
The most important
book. The most important, yes, right? Direct quote from that.
I'm trying to find this other, because there's, I don't know if it's in his intro or the preface, but where he talked about, yeah, here it is. In churches across America and in other nations where I preach this message, over 50% of the people have responded to the altar call. Although this is a high response, it still is not everyone. Pride holds some people back from responding.
Oh, man. Including maybe somebody who expects more than 50% of the crowd to show up at an altar call that he calls. Could there be pride in that? I don't know. Could there be, maybe?
Sound a little offended, JB.
No, exactly.
And as a writer, I wish I had this kind of
bravado. I don't know.
Just everybody, you need this book. And I know exactly what it should elicit in you. And if it doesn't, that's on you.
Amazing to be as an author and be like, I am giving you the most important book you will ever read.
Second only, maybe, to the Bible. And only because I need you to know where these scriptures are coming from.
That's so, like, that's amazing that you would put that in print. That's amazing.
Just
I show up. It's horrible, but it's amazing all at the same time.
And then as a reader, because I had like read, I'm like, oh, I started this club and I put it on myself to read these books. And I'm dreading it. Mm-hmm. And I love reading. Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to think, is there any book in the secular world that I have this kind of reaction to? Like, there are books I don't like, and I wouldn't read again, but there's nothing I can think of that I'm just like, oh, just like, at the thought of it existing and me having to engage with it.
Right.
I'm like, that can't be normal.
Right.
Like, and that so many of us have these kind of feelings about Christian books.
Right. Correct. Yeah. And these are, I mean, these are those of us that aren't, I mean, at least for myself and from what I know of your background, aren't just like Sunday Christians or like Easter, Christmas Christians. Like, we were in there, man. Like, I was in church like four. Yes, exactly. 4 days a week, like, was, you know, leadership and like at least one or two, you know, involved in like a couple others, morning and evening services on Sundays as well. And it's something where it's like, for those of us, and now it's like, for me, it's like decades. I'm now a middle-aged woman and I'm looking back and there's been a lot of, you know, of course, like, I have so many friendships and a community and a belief system and experiences and absolutely, like, truths, beautiful truths that I hold dear, you know, that blossomed within that community and within that environment. So when I look back and I am saying to myself and speaking to others of saying, you know, this was wrong, this was abusive, this is the mechanism that enabled, you know, now like mounting cases that we just are now hearing more of and seeing more of, but were always there, of abuse. You know, it was always there. And so I'm now understanding the mechanism. And I've worked in settings where, you know, from like government to politics, and you understand there is like a basic mentality and a mechanism in which these things are deployed. And the church does it in spades, you know, but somehow thinks it's separate. And it's even more dangerous because they say it's mandated by God. So then, you know, for those of us who are feeling and seeing things that make us wary or uncomfortable or alarmed, we're told, you know, in these books, like it's a procedure, you know, it's part of the mechanism saying like, shut that down within yourself. Don't think, don't feel. Because then it's like, you're offending God. The only one who has a right to be offended almost is God. And I mean, who in a pure heart who loves God and who has appreciated all the good things that they've experienced through their faith community, and God, would want that? No one, you know? So it's just, it's even more troubling, you know, when we don't talk about these things and don't bring it out into the light.
Right. So, okay, we know John Bevere wrote this book for everybody in the world. That's what he has told us. But who is this book actually for? Who did he write this for?
I mean, to me, it's like he's clearly speaking to people within the church, right? Especially in chapter one, because he's talking about people within the church being shocked as to when matters of offense come up. So it's like you're already dealing with like a community that, like, you know, the quote unquote rules, you know what I mean? Like, it's not super fresh to you. It's just reinforcing a certain mentality.
And so who does this book actually help?
Well, it's the most important book that those within the church are going to read, apparently. So he would say the church. I would say probably the leadership that wants to reinforce that if you're upset about something. I know that's the context of when it was introduced in my church as well. You know, now looking back, like, it's funny because I hadn't even thought of that until like this came up, and I was like, oh my gosh, I completely forgot that. Again, in any other context, you would look at that and be like, oh, that's kind of manipulative. But here it's prescriptive, right? It's prescriptive. It's like, I have the solution that's going to help me. I mean, well, you in the church, but me as well. Really all of us. It's like, oh, such a mess.
So I mean, I knew what my visceral feelings about the book were. But I was like, I want to try to approach these things fairly. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, with the possibility that maybe I will read it with different eyes and see some good things or see, you know, what they're trying to be. So I came at it from, you know, that verse, everything is permissible, mm-hmm. not everything is beneficial.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, he's absolutely allowed to write this book. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, is it beneficial or not? So, on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being beneficial to everyone, 5 coming in at neutral, it's permissible, it's here, it's not doing anything, and 1 being harmful to everyone, where would you place this book?
I would say it's at a solid 2.5 maybe, because I'm just giving some grace to the fact that, you know, again, that I'm positive that there is good intent in, you know, part of this here, and that, you know, then forthcoming chapters that there are, you know, maybe a bit more, helpful, like tangibly helpful things that come forth and more context, I'm hoping. But right now, you know, from what I recall, even from like when I initially read it and just, you know, focusing on my one chapter, It's very it's prescriptive. It's like the same thing as like the pro you know, the beginning of the book, like the prologue, where he's like, this is the most important book, it's going to change everything, and but doesn't really back it up. And that's the same thing that I'm finding in chapter one. There's just not a lot of context, and there's not, from his own offense and his situation, it's just like very quick, like lines like, I was offended, I didn't admit it, I had a lot of pride, but I don't know what that looked like. What are you talking about? Can you just tell me what you're talking about? And so here are, and so if he continues to do that throughout this book, then people are going to handle it the way that I think I handled a lot of things, and was conditioned within the church and so many people I know, which is like any negative feeling towards, especially an authority, mandated rule or like statement or anything like that, or questioning too much, is like anti-God, anti-harmony, anti, you know, all of these things. And so there's such a degree of like constantly, of course, like fueling that mechanism of like, you're so sinful, you're so broken, you're so this, you're so that. And I was that person who, because of that, would go up for like the altar call and salvation recalls, like how many times, like countless, being like, I don't know, like I'm saved, I think, like, Lord, I love you, experience all these things, but like, I better just get reset. I better make real sure. Cause like, why am I struggling with, you know, this like official abuse? I mean, I'm talking, I've been through scenarios where it's like people would be in jail, but you know, everything that I was told, again, without context, was to, you know, to harbor those feelings was wrong, was evil. Right. And so you start to shut down and you stop questioning things, you know, at a certain point, because you're told it's just faith. So I think that's very destructive. So I just, because of that, I would go with the 2.5.
Are you me? Because going up for the altar calls.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, good job on being in the good 50%, because you would have.
I know, A++ for us. We're like, not us, John. Don't be offended at us. We would be at that altar call day of your meetings.
Every night. Why am I still so offended? What is wrong with me? Take it away, God, please.
Oh, gosh.
So who would you recommend this book to?
No one. No one. I would not. You know what I would recommend is there's a book called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. I would recommend books from like Dr. Caroline Leaf, and like where you can understand the brain, you can understand what's happening to you physiologically, you can know that you are not sinful and broken in your, you know, what I would say is God-given design to be human. I still believe in God, and I think that's so much more beneficial, because then you'll understand like what parts of this is unhealthy, is truly like not good, not right, maybe even, you know? But this is just, it's no context, blanket statements, putting this book up on a pedestal. It's like, and then shaming people, you know, that if it's like, but then trying to not shame people by saying only 50% of the people came up, but really there should have been everybody should come up. It's like, well, yes, then it's a human condition thing. Can we talk about conflict resolution? Can we talk about, you know, emotions? Can we talk about psychology and that? But no, we can't. We're just going to bring in Satan and let you know that Satan is baiting you.
Baiting
when you feel
you.
These feels.
Just eating it up. Which is like a whole other conversation. Because I'm like, I've been trying to just work out the title in my head. And I'm like,
right.
Bait is something you want. Like,
that's true. That's so I'm true. Like,
how are you? Because whatever you're doing to offend me, mm-hmm. probably didn't want that either. So like, this is wild.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Debate of it's a puzzle.
So yes. Many extremisms, right? From like the title itself to like going ahead and telling people as the author that you are giving them the most important book that they will ever hold and read.
I mean, like, have your wife write that or something, but like for you to be like,
it's like, did any of the people who just like wrote him, you know, referrals in this say like, yeah, this is the most important book that I've ever read. I will.
And I'd say no, because he for sure would have quoted that. Right.
Isn't it Proverbs like it that you should, you know, let another praise you?
He said, no, we're going to erase that verse.
Yeah.
We're going to add this.
I guess we won't find that in there. Right. If we find it, it won't be in any context.
Just... I mean, and then there's a whole other issue of, like, I think he mainly uses, like, the King James Version. But sure. I'm like, as soon as you're using the King James, I'm out. Because, like, what? Why? That's a choice you're making. And I don't like it.
Well, let's not get into who King James was either, huh? That's, oh my goodness, the conversations around that and King James's sexuality and whatnot. No one wants to talk about that. Okay.
That's offensive.
That's offensive.
But John Bevere, he wrote the world's most important book about the bait of Satan, which, okay. But he got to choose. He got to decide what that was. And for him, it was offense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you could choose one issue, this is the bait of Satan, and every church needs to hear this, what would that issue be?
Oh my goodness. I think power grab, and what that really looks like, the mechanism behind it, you know?
Yeah.
And why? Like, why people do that?
And I'm gonna predict that JB would be getting more invitations to speak.
Oh, hands down. Yeah, my book wouldn't have as many fans.
But it already makes so much more sense. Debate of Satan. Debate. Power? Yes. Mm. I want that.
Feelings and offense, though. That's the true. That's how Satan gets you. And feels.
So as a good thought to hold and like a palate cleanser, I ask you guys to, you know, think of something that you do enjoy, something that you would recommend. So, finishing up, because please, nobody go read The Bait of Satan.
Please, no.
give us something else to read, watch, listen to. What do you recommend?
Oh my goodness. I tell you what, like, I love reading a ton, but through the pandemic, I have gotten back into almost, not quite daily, but aiming to daily times in nature, just being in nature, feeling the breeze, looking at the trees, feeling the sunshine, experiencing that gratitude to be alive, you know, and connecting with God without all of these, I guess, messages of how I should do it, right? This much time reading this book, like praying X amount of time, you know, and I just realize how truly beautiful this this life is, as much as, you know, there are, of course, is just so much that we hurt and we ache over and we frankly hate, you know, there's so much beauty, and that helps me feel actually good in myself, connected to God, gives me that refuel to be more patient as well. Just even a quick little walk, 10 minutes even, if that's all you've got, you know, just highly recommend that. Yeah. So. Well, thanks for doing this. I think an honest brilliance in the way that you question, you know, and you I like the Socratic kind of methodology. You're just like, you question it, you know? And that is, that's good. I think that's so important because that gives people the freedom to, because the questions are there. The questions are there. Yeah, I really appreciate like what you've put out there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And in closing,
it is my prayer that as you read this book, God's word will enlighten the eyes of your understanding, that you will see your true condition and become free from any offense you are harboring. Don't let pride keep you from seeing and repenting.
So the prayer at the end of this chapter is that God's word will enlighten the eyes of your understanding. And I guess we better pray that, because it is for damn sure that John Bevere is not going to do it. I don't know what you wrote on your list of things you expected from this chapter, but at the top of my list was definitions. JB has made a huge claim. He has named offense as the bait of Satan, as a trap that Satan will use to keep people out of God's will and possibly out of heaven. And then he never defines offense. He uses the word a lot interchangeably with hurt in conjunction with pride and as evidence of sin, but he never defines it. And so looking at this book from the outside, it is blatant to me that it is a tool to make gaslit people gaslight themselves. Because imagine there were people who lived in a black and white world, where black and white were the only colors they knew the names for, and then somebody comes in and tells them that to have anything that is the color red is sin, but then never clarifies what red is. Those people would be out in the world nervous about anything that isn't black or white. And what John Bevere has done with this book is set the standard that not being offended is the only safe way to be, and the only way to be sure that you're not offended is to feel nothing. Not hurt, not angry, whether justified or not, you're just better off not feeling it. He even says,
just because you were mistreated, you do not have permission to hold on to an offense. Two wrongs do not make a right.
So if you mistreat me and I am offended, I am just as wrong as you were. And that is a sick, sick ideology that leaves the door wide open for abuse. It's dangerous. Dangerous ideology that he has labeled as theology based on half of one verse that he references right at the beginning, just to pull his little Greek word from it, and then never again. He just cherry picks as he goes on his merry way. I did not want to fact check his scripture references, so I didn't. Because I didn't want to, like I said. But also, I shouldn't have had to. John Bevere decided to write this book. He decided to put forth this wild theology, so I think it was his responsibility to prove it. But he didn't, because he couldn't. I'm going to have some smarter, actual biblical scholars come on and debunk this shit theology, but anyone who legitimately thinks Jesus would be worried about people being offended would label offense as a sin and would have warnings, not for the people causing offense, but for the ones being offended. Anyone who believes that has to have a twisted view of Jesus. That is a mean theology. Wielded by a mean God who loves in mean ways. So my top three issues with this chapter are 1, the lack of definition, 2, the piss poor theology built on scriptural cherry picking, and 3, John Bevere's vagueness. He says things like,
once I was severely hurt by a couple of ministers,
and
there was a time in my life when I went through intense trials such as I'd ever faced before.
And that's pretty much all you get. No details, just these vague assertions that JB has had a hard time. But let's be real. Dude is a white man, a Christian white man at the top of white Christendom. There are different types of hard, different types of offense, and call me cynical, but I don't think it's an accident that from his perspective, it's much more important that people who are being offended be taught to question their attitudes than to question the people, places, and systems causing their offense. So that's chapter 1. And that is the beginning of that. The Bait of Satan is 14 terrible chapters long, and we've got an episode for each one. Thanks to my guest, I have no doubt that I had more fun reading this book than John Bevere ever intended. And I think you're going to enjoy this new podcast. Real talk, free content is not free for the creators. And this new podcast was originally going to be a Patreon-only thing, but it was honestly so annoying trying to set it up that I just said, forget it. So now it's just a regular new podcast. If you want to listen for free, you can. But if you enjoy the content and you're able to, there are multiple ways to throw a little financial support in my direction, and I hope you will. But Either way, I am Janice Legata. This has been another episode of God Has Not Given. Thank you for joining me. If this has meant anything to you, sparked anything for you, or was just a general good time, please let the people know. Rate and review this podcast on Apple. Ask about me at God Has Not Given on the gram. Watch me on my Vimeo channel. That's a thing. And yeah, hit the show notes for all the links. Take care of you. Be well. And I will talk to you soon.
I am an E. I am an EX. I am an EXPANGELICA.